Like to welcome everyone to our 15th episode of Two Men in a Bible Fighting the Cosmic Battle, and we're in Genesis. We're way far along in the book, right, Bob?
We're already up to chapter 18.
And today we're going to go through 18 verses 1 through 33.
Yep, the whole thing.
And I think we've got some interesting concepts. Any of our listeners that are familiar with this particular chapter, I mean, for me, the next couple of chapters for me, Bob, they create some questions, because there's some things that happen in those chapters that aren't normal to our lives today that seem a little weird or different.
That's right.
But I really think there's some important messages this particular chapter as we continue from, you know, where Abraham was in chapter 17, you know, promised the son, and his name's going to be Isaac, and, you know, all that we just talked about, and then jumping into 18.
That's right. So let's, Jamie, the best way is let's just start out reading it.
Dive in?
And I may not read the whole chapter all at once. This kind of falls into two sections, so... Let me start reading. Genesis chapter 18. Now the Lord appeared to him by the oaks of Mamre, while he was sitting at the tent door in the heat of the day. When he lifted up his eyes and looked, behold, three men were standing opposite him. And when he saw them, he ran from the tent door to meet them and bowed himself to the earth and said, My Lord, if now I have found favor in your sight, please do not pass your servant by. Please let a little water be brought, and wash your feet, and rest yourselves under the tree. And I'll bring a piece of bread, and you may refresh yourselves. After that you may go on, since you have visited your servant. They said, So do, as you have said. So Abraham hurried to the tent, to Sarah. And he said, Quickly, prepare three measures of fine flour, knead it, and make bread cakes. Abraham also ran to the herd, and took a tender and choice calf, gave it to the servant, and hurried to prepare it. He took curds and milk and the calf which he had prepared, and placed it before them. And he was standing by them under the tree as they ate. Then they said to him, Where's Sarah, your wife? And he said, There, in the tent. And he said, I will surely return to you at this time next year. Behold, Sarah your wife will have a son. And Sarah was listening to the tent door, which was behind him. Now Abraham and Sarah were old, advanced in age. Sarah was past childbearing. Sarah laughed to herself, saying, After I have become old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord being old also? And the Lord said to Abraham, Why did Sarah laugh, saying, Shall I indeed bear a child when I am so old? Is anything too difficult for the Lord? At the appointed time I will return to you, at this time next year, and Sarah will have a son. Sarah denied it, however, saying, I did not laugh, for she was afraid. And he said, No, but you did laugh. Let's pause there. That's basically the first half of that chapter. That's how it breaks down to me. You know, Jamie, it's so important to continue reading. I'm sorry I didn't give you a chance to ask a question, but... Even as I was reading that, you know, I was struck for the last couple weeks rereading these passages going, hey, you know, Abraham laughed too. Why does he not get upbraided the way Sarah did? And who knows how many times I've read this passage, but just now reading that again, there's a lot more development in the Sarah passage. You know, for instance... The first thing that occurred to me as we were just reading it is apparently when Abraham laughed, it was out loud. Right? And he falls right down there, on right his face. In a sense, in the
hiding.
Open.
Right.
Yeah.
I see
Sarah's,
what you're saying.
With Sarah, it says inside. Mm-hmm. Right? Like in her heart, she laughed. Like verse 12, Sarah laughed to herself.
Right.
You know, whereas Abraham was... outward with his expression like, man, are you kidding me? Kind of thing. Sarah's going, no way. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Abraham's going, are you kidding? Sarah's going, uh-uh. In her heart, she's like bitterly laughing, sort of. you get that sort of impression, right?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
No way.
Absolutely. Totally. That's exactly the...
Whereas Abraham's kind of saying, I don't see how. Sarah's saying, no way. There's a difference between, you know, I don't know how that's going to happen, as opposed to, that is not going to happen.
And feeling it.
Yeah. That's the sense that I get. And also, keep this in mind, after the last chapter, don't you suspect, it's not always healthy to do this, so I say this with a big caveat, you don't want to read between the lines too much. You want to be guided by the author, not what the author's not saying, but by what he is saying.
Right.
Sometimes silence is important. You can infer certain things. I have to imagine Abraham told Sarah what happened in the last chapter.
Right.
I'm sure he went into the tent that night. So he wasn't away when God... He was right there. So when he met God, I'm sure, you know, 5 minutes later, he's going, Sarah, God just was here, and we're going to have a kid. Right? So she's been told, you know, a couple times now.
Well, and as we pointed out in 2 episodes ago, that, you know, she also tried to manipulate the situation.
Yeah, that was her generating that whole, here, take Hagar, my maid.
Not in a bad way, but just,
you know,
as you pointed out.
Yeah, in a man's way kind of thing, which is not God's way.
Right.
But you understand the point? Abraham would have told her, hey, God just showed up. Talk to me. And I offered Ishmael. And he said, no, from us. So she's already got that, and now here's God himself going, yeah. And she's laughing still.
And as you pointed out, to herself, but he's omniscient.
Yeah. Yeah, and like she knows enough, you know, not to laugh out loud. She, you know, it's a humble culture that way. And she knows that, but in her heart, she's shaking her head, and God's going, hey, hey, hey.
And there wasn't a lot of time between the circumcision and where we're at now. That's
the time is irrelevant.
Right.
It could have been a day.
Right.
Could have been a week. It doesn't matter.
It's right there.
It's
in
just next event.
Next event.
Yeah.
And when he saw the three men, offered them.
Actually, Jamie, hold on.
Okay.
Because the point you just made, yeah, you're right. After that last meeting, they got to circumcise her. So you don't think Sarah would have been going, what's the deal? Why are you doing this? Well, because God just showed up and said this.
Right. And he wouldn't have hidden that.
Yeah, so it's not a big inference. It's for certain he'd have told her, here's the deal.
And so she knows the promise.
Yeah. And she's still, in her heart, shaking her head. She's not there. Which doesn't mean she's not of the household of faith, but she's opposed. You know,
well, and I'm going to have to remember this point. I'm going to bring it up before I forget it. Okay, so as you said that, Bob, you know, I got a picture. We get the same thing. You know, we're all in that same boat. You know, we have the same promise. We have the promise of everlasting life, but the world, and when I say we, I'm talking the world.
I understand.
The world is, you know, kind of like...
Shaking its head.
Yeah, like, really?
Yeah.
Really?
In your heart, you're going, you know, really, I'm with the world.
Right, yeah. How's really going to happen?
Yeah, it is.
And so on a much smaller level, that's really, you know, the picture that's being illustrated here.
Yeah, well, in this sense, Jamie, I remember someone, or you'll hear that, I'm sure you have heard this, and every person over the course of time does hear it, to someone, you know, not of the household of faith, you know, you're kidding me, that book's thousands of years old, what would it have to say to the issues today? Oh, everything.
Mm-hmm.
Human issues have never changed.
It's the basis for every issue
today. Are you to believe God or not? That's the issue. And that's always been the same. So we're going to go through the same sorts of tests that Abraham and Sarah went through.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think God's going to ask me to sacrifice Sophia.
Right.
But the same belief kinds of, you know, do you believe me? and on this stuff.
And not to wear the phrase out, but believing in God and believing God are two, I mean,
that's
two
right.
entirely
yeah,
different.
Yeah, if you ask, that's a great thing to bring up, though, Jamie. Like, let's apply it to Sarah. Does Sarah believe in God?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, she's with Abraham. She believes all of that. Does she believe God? No, because he's saying you're going to have this kid. And I understand her basis for unbelief is I'm 90. You could explain it this way. She's not having her periods anymore, right? She's not, you know.
Right.
And I understand exactly where she's coming from.
Humanly speaking,
she's right.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, wise in that sense. Hey, I'm past the thing. But look at verse, and this is the whole point of the chapter in the first half, verse 14. Is anything too difficult for the Lord? You can almost hear God saying, didn't Abraham tell you my name was El Shaddai? Normal rules don't apply to me.
Right. He's restating what
yeah, because, hey, there's a big sea in front of my people, an ocean. How are they going to escape? Oh, I can split that. There's nothing that he can't do. Normal rules don't apply to him. Right? So, I understand where you're coming from. Physically, you're past childbearing age. That's not too big for me.
Right. And Abraham doesn't recognize these three men. He doesn't know who they are. Does he, or is mm-hmm. that the way he'd normally treat a traveler at that time?
Well, those are great questions. Hospitality is a huge issue in their cultures. That's one of those cultural leaps that's extremely difficult for Western Christianity, you know, Western culture to make.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We don't understand the value of that in their cultures. Kathy and I were in South Carolina last week. We stayed at a hotel. We don't have to go knock on somebody's door and say, hey, can we use one of your bedrooms for a week, right? But in their culture, you did have to do that. So there is hospitality. That's a huge factor. But that's not... He would do that to most strangers. You get the impression because he's a faithful guy. But he's got a sense of who they are.
And go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was just going to read a verse that... you know, when he says, for instance, at the end of 3, my Lord...
Well, and I was wondering...
That's pretty strong. That's not Yahweh. He's not using... But he's... in submission to this guy.
So this is an old English times.
So he's not just hosting him.
Right.
Pardon me?
This is an old English times when my Lord was, you know,
well,
like
almost
mister.
Not mister, but he recognizes the superiority of this guy.
But not necessarily who he is yet?
I think he knows. Yeah.
And the reason I ask is, in verse 9 it says, they said, right? And
yep.
then... It says, and then if you move on, they said in verse 10, then he said, and then
yeah,
in
it
verse
shifts
13,
back and forth between
and the
he,
Lord said.
Yeah, it shifts back and forth between plural and singular, and then the Lord. He knows. He knows
gotcha.
Who it is.
Gotcha.
And by the way, you know, another aspect of it would be, I guess this is reading between the lines a little bit, but he knows God. God has spoken to him directly.
Right, they've been
showed up
close.
To him. He would recognize him. You know what I mean? It's like Jesus saying in the New Testament, you know, my sheep know my voice. Like, you know him, right? Like,
right.
In the sense that if I put before you a Quran and said, hey, Jamie, here's God, you'd start shaking your head. You'd go, that's not him. I don't know how to explain that to you, but that is not him. That's not God.
That's not my father.
You would know.
You recognize
your
father's
knows.
Voice.
Of course. And Abraham knows.
Nice. Because I didn't understand that.
Hard.
I couldn't get the sense, does he know him?
You're asking a great question, though, Jamie, because, you know, and we don't just shoot from the hip on this. I mean, we prepare
right.
for these studies, right? And every volume, you know, I've read on this, they all struggle with that. It's exactly your observations. They were going, hey, It's plural, it's plural, it's plural. It's singular. It's Lord, it's them, it's what's going on here? Does he know? They're asking those questions too. And I would just answer it not so much technically as a grammarian, but more as a street-level theologian. You know your dad's voice. Abraham, this isn't his first rodeo. He's met this guy before. He knows him. He knows who it is. And the fact that there's more than one, it's God and a couple angels.
Right.
I think.
Right. And Sarah, you know, as you were pointing out, she's laughing to herself.
Yeah.
Again, that doubt.
Yeah.
Being displayed.
But derision in laugh, you know, it's kind of strong. Again, I don't mean necessarily to play her off against Abraham, except that the text did that. Because it said Abraham laughed also. But like we said, you know, on our last podcast, he's laughing in... It's not that he doesn't struggle with belief, too, because he is at that point.
And he's human.
But it's this struggle in him between he really does believe God, but he just cannot see humanly how that could be, and his laughter is displaying that tension. Okay, Sarah's laughter seems more like she's decided.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, you know, there's no way. She's not struggling with how could it be. She's decided it can't be.
And how
that's
many,
what it looks like Moses is portraying here.
And to bring this to today's terms, how many times in our own lives do we do the exact same thing? I know we talked about that a little bit on the last podcast, but how many times do we decide, or do we think that we're going to decide how it's going to be?
Yeah, we, you know, most of us are like Sarah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I almost weep when I say that.
But it's true.
Yeah.
And which brings up to me, and I mean, it's going to take us a couple of thousand pages to get here, but that's the importance of sharing the word. And that's the importance of, you know, sharing with somebody that you know that maybe you're close to in faith, or even if you're not close to them in faith, but sharing this podcast with them.
Yeah. Yeah, pass it on, because we need this message. And what I'd like to clarify at this point is, you know, to bring it into our day and age, there are people who've been taught to believe in one sense more than what they should believe. And we talked about this on the last podcast, but God did not promise to me land in Israel. He didn't promise me the promised land, so to speak. You know, I'm not part of those promises. He promised me eternal life
as far as
quantity and quality in his kingdom and dominion. You know, he's going to rule, you know, that we share in that and so on, and persecution. But he never promised me that I'm going to be as rich as Abraham, or he didn't promise any of those things. He never promised me a house. I can't sit before God and make up my own ideas about what God's blessing should look like and then hold him to that promise. This is not necessarily
where... That's a great point, Bob.
Well, let me go here with this. It's not necessarily where I wanted to go, but it's a great illustration. It's not mine. I mean, I heard this from a guy when I came to faith, maybe within the first few months, and I will never forget this illustration. This clarifies so many things. So many people perceive God more as a Santa Claus kind of guy. You know, you can do this for me, you can do that for me. And so they draw up their Christmas list, right? Almost like a contract. You know, they sign the top of the page, and then here's the things I want for Christmas, and there's a big long list, and they're all detailed out, and then there's a place for God to sign that at the bottom. Yeah, that's their covenant with God. When God said, you know, to Abram, last chapter, you need to keep my covenant,
mm-hmm.
Okay, that's people's today. That's their covenant with God. And so imagine that sheet of paper, that God reading that in heaven. And he looks at it, and he sees the place for him to sign on the bottom. Let me tell you what he does with that thing. He crinkles that up, throws it in trash. Not disrespectfully, because, hey, right. a child of God. I mean, I would
but
never...
But I see your picture. I mean, I
just
understand
as far as the
point.
Picture. Right. I mean, I would never disrespect my daughter in that way. You right. know, her wishes are her wishes. But,
right.
But for the point of, you know, I'm signing your contract, no. So crinkles that up, throws it away, gets out a new sheet of paper. And at the top, he signs his name. God Almighty. Yahweh El Shaddai. And then all the list is blank. And then there's a place for you to sign on the bottom. And he hands that back. Let's try this contract. And you look at it and you go, well, there's nothing on there. Yep, that's right. You sign, and I'll start filling it in. That's how it works.
It's a beautiful point, Bob.
Somebody told me that. I've been in the faith, you know, a couple months, and I praise God for... And I don't even remember the guy who told me that, but that clarified so many things for me. That's the deal.
Right.
You know, like, I remember reading it. My mom was just a great reader, Jamie. She's passed away, but she... worked at a bookstore in town in Cleveland. She was a reviewer and so on. So when I was this youngest kid, she'd bring home books to me all the time. So that's how I learned to, you know, experience life besides the things I was doing outside of that. Just reading was just a joy. She'd say, you know, what do you want to read about? And I'd say, pirates, Mom, I love pirates. You know, she'd bring me books on pirates, you know. But all that to say, so, I remember as a young boy, one of the books, she'd bring me, like, spy stuff from time to time, and there was this cop, and he's solving this case, and he runs the bad guy down in the middle of Europe in the woods. It's just the cop with the bad guy. Bad guy's got nothing. The cop's got the gun. You know, the cop's in total control. And the cop says, hey, I need to know, you know, who did the crime or whatever, and the crook says, well, here's the deal. I'll tell you, you know, who did it and who they're connected to, how the whole thing works. But what I need from you is, you know, I got to get in the witness protection thing. You got to set me up. You know, I need this income. I need this. then he's done and the cop goes, well, here's the deal. You tell me what I need to know and maybe I won't kill you. That's the deal. Not, you know, who's in the driver's seat here? And so people, the reason for that illustration is people believe that God is there to answer our wish list.
That he works for us.
Yeah.
In a sense, I don't want to... Yeah. I don't want to.
No, that's right. And he's going, no. You know, I'm adopting you into my family and so on. You have rights and privileges as an heir, but I'm God. Okay, I make the deal.
Right.
You sign on or not, but I'm not signing on to your deal. You're signing on to mine.
Well, and as we pointed out in the last podcast, God's will is God's will. I mean...
Otherwise, he's not God.
Right. And,
you know,
and
literally,
it's not...
One of my desires... Sorry to cut you off, Jim.
No, go ahead.
One of my desires is that, you know, all our listeners would become theologians. And God is not... a person we create in our image. We are in his image. He's God. You if you sat down and thought about it, you would not want him to be our image.
Right.
You wouldn't want him to be your Santa Claus.
Mm-hmm.
He's God. He will never be less than that. He's totally sovereign. He's all wise. He's all loving. He will never change those things. He's immutable. He can't. If he changed any of those things, he would cease to be God. And you're going to need him as God. So let him be God. You get on board with him, so to speak.
Well, and I think, you know, as we move into the second half of this, I think that's the point I got, and I'm glad that you're driving that home is again, it's his sovereignty. It's yep. understanding, and if you have that relationship with your father, you that respect is innate.
That's right. That's right. That's a great way to say it. It's innate.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. So that's really the point. of that first half. And that's just not the point of half a chapter.
Right.
That's the point of a lot of the Bible.
It's the cosmic battle.
Yeah. Is anything too difficult for God? No. He can make you live forever. He can give you a body that would never wear out. He could feed you every day. He could provide your every need. He's unlimited in power. There's nothing too difficult for him.
Is there any doubt in your mind who's going to win the cosmic battle?
No.
Who will overcome in that
no.
endeavor?
No, and in a sense, even the way you asked it, who is going to? It's already won.
Who has?
Yeah, who has won?
Great,
It never was a question. We're waiting for it to play out, but I already know the score. Yeah, 100-0. So let's read the second half, Jamie. Remember the end of verse 15. He said, "No, but you did laugh." Right, just letting you know who's boss, who's omniscient.
Mm-hmm.
All right, verse 16. Then the men rose up from there, looked down towards Sodom. And Abraham was walking with them to send them off. The Lord said, "Shall I hide from Abraham what I'm about to do? Since Abraham will surely become a great and mighty nation, and in him all the nations of the earth shall be blessed. For I have chosen him, so that he may command his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord, by doing righteousness and justice, so that the Lord may bring upon Abram what he has spoken about him." The Lord said, "The outcry of Sodom and Gomorrah is indeed great. Their sin is exceedingly grave. I'll go down now and see if they have done entirely according to its outcry, which has come to me. And if not, I will know." Then the men turned away from there and went toward Sodom, while Abraham was still standing before the Lord. Abraham came near and said, "Will you indeed sweep away the righteous with the wicked? Suppose there are 50 righteous within the city. Will you indeed sweep away, not spare the place for the sake of the 50 righteous who are in it? Far be it from you to do such a thing, to slay the righteous with the wicked, so that the righteous and the wicked are treated alike. Far be it from you. Shall not the judge of all the earth deal justly?" So the Lord said, "If I find in Sodom 50 righteous within the city, then I'll spare the whole place on their account." Abraham replied, "Now behold, I have ventured to speak to the Lord, although I am but dust and ashes. Suppose the 50 righteous are lacking 5. Will you destroy the whole city because of 5? And he said, "I'll not destroy it if I find 45 there." And he said to him yet again and said, or he spoke to him yet again and said, "Suppose 40 are found there." And he said, "I'll not do it on account of 40. Then he said, "Oh, may the Lord not be angry, and I shall speak. Suppose 30 are found there." Now he's jumping. Sorry, Dick. He's jumping by tens now instead of 5. But anyway, and he said, "I will not do it if I find 30 there." And he said, "Now behold, I have ventured to speak to the Lord. Suppose 20 are found there." And he said, "I'll not destroy it on account of the 20. Then he said, "Oh, may the Lord not be angry, and I shall speak only this once. Suppose 10 are found there." And he said, "I'll not destroy it on account of the 10. As soon as he had finished speaking to Abraham, the Lord departed. Abraham returned to his place.
Very interesting.
What do you think?
Well, let's go back to... So, the two with God.
Okay, so there's three people there.
Right.
In the
and
appearance
Abraham.
Of men. Yeah, plus right. Abraham. 4 total, but 3 supernatural.
Right.
And they appear as men.
Mm-hmm.
So, God goes with Abram, and you imagine them... The picture that Moses paints is, you know, they walk over to a hillside where they can look down, you know, mm-hmm. across the way, and they're looking at Sodom and Gomorrah in the far distance, whereas the two who left are the angels, and they go down to actually visit Sodom and Gomorrah.
And from a reader's point of view here, you know, we just talked about Abraham and his relationship with God on the last podcast, and how comforting and how that made the hair on the back of my neck stand up. And then how uncomfortable could this have been for Abraham? He's standing with these three guys, and he's privy to this conversation, right? You know, with the Lord said, "Shall I hide from Abraham what I'm about to do?"
Yeah.
He's standing right there.
Yeah.
Talking to the other two.
Yeah. In a sense, not just privy, but exalted.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Part of.
A human being is going to be let in on the decisions of God.
On a divine council.
Yeah, and not even let in, but listen to. Abraham, not argues with him, but, you know, intercedes, right? Talks to him. Hey, you're the judge of everything. You're righteous, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, well, what if, you know, and then...
Mm-hmm.
So, in other words, Jamie, one of the things I wanted to bring out of this passage was two things. So, remind me. Once I get into one, sometimes I forget.
Did you have a two?
Yeah, remind me of the number two. But number one is, you know, in our role with the Lord, don't you intercede for other people?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that like part and parcel of a relationship with Him? Is, Lord, my neighbor here, you know, please do this for him and so on. Mm-hmm. Here's a city that's about to be annihilated, and God's going to let Abraham know, you want to step in here? You want to step in, because I'll forestall what I'm going to do if you plead with me.
And he's not haggling, right? I mean,
it's not. God, like I said, God's not an equal. He doesn't, you know, it's his deal, not ours.
Right.
But he will listen to his children. And in his concern for righteousness, that's what he's really after. Right, you know, imagine, let's paint the picture a little bit, Jamie. You're looking down on Sodom and Gomorrah. You're not seeing, you know, gypsum Colorado. You're not looking at Eagle or Vail. In some ways, maybe you are, but
right.
In most ways, no, this was a violent, horrible place.
Big.
Yeah.
Big.
Oh, yeah. And he's saying, you know, there's travesty going on here. There's injustice. People are being murdered, you know, it's terribly immoral. It is the situation, all right. And you're going to get a clearer picture of that as we read on. But it's a debased place. This is havoc. This is mankind run amok.
So is the outcry is not necessarily, oh, come and help us. The outcry is just
the outcry is, they killed my kid. They did this. They did, you know, where are you, God? Where's justice on earth? That kind of outcry. Where are you, God? There's silence here. I remember a court case, Jamie, maybe 20 years ago. I was in East Vail, working out in the racket club in East Vail. I'm reading the Vail Daily when I'm on the exercise bike, and I'm reading this article about this woman, I believe is in Wyoming, I'm not certain of the state, and her boy had been raped by a guy. Okay, and they're having the trial, and they basically slapped the guy's hand, that was it. Okay, it didn't really, you know, bring justice.
Mm-hmm.
And the woman brought a gun in the trial. Now you can't, because they got all the metal detectors.
Right.
But 20 years ago,
you could.
They
you
didn't know, you know,
that.
In her petticoats or whatever, she's got it hidden there. The judge declares a sentence, you know, 6 months, you know, in jail with TV, and we'll feed you, blah, blah, blah. She stood up and shot the guy, the perpetrator. Of course, they arrested her and so on. They said, you know, what are you doing? She goes, that's not justice. You didn't do anything. I had to take it into my own hands because you wouldn't do it. In 6 months, that guy's going to get out and do the same thing again. Okay, so it's that sense.
That's what's
right?
going on.
That's what's going on in Sodom. People are crying out, you know, where are you, God? This is wrong, what's going on here.
And so he's going down. Now, all right, humor me here. So God's omniscient, right? Yeah. He knows what's going on there. But is it so bad here that he comes to see this in person? Or
no, that's a good question. It's for the sake of illustration, right? It's painted in our terms so that you can understand he's discerning the facts of the case. He's not just listening to the outcry. He's got the issue.
And he's
right?
gonna,
and does he have to come down to see that? No. But to interact with Abraham, he's got to take some form of, right? It's got to
well,
be
because it. Of the three, he doesn't go down
no,
there.
No, he stays there with Abraham.
Only two go
yeah,
down.
Yeah, and they discuss. The angels go down. That's right. So now, it's portrayed in terms that we could understand. Is not the judge of all the earth righteous? And the point that you would conclude as a reader is, yes. That's the main point of the second half of this chapter. The main point of the first half was, is anything too difficult from God? The main point of the second half is, yes, the judge of the earth is righteous. And that should scare most people to death. And for other people, it should cheer your heart. He's going to do what's right.
Well, the dovetail that I see is that yes, he is righteous, but there, you know,
well, righteousness calls for action.
Right. There are consequences.
He's not an enabler.
Yeah, no. This is Disneyland.
Yeah, no. These people have been wronged, and he's going to go set that straight.
And is Abraham, why is he asking these questions? Is he getting to know the grace of God? You know, what do you...
There's a couple things going on there. Number one is Lot's down there.
Right.
And that's Abraham's nephew. Hey, whoa. If you wipe out Sodom and Gomorrah, my nephew's going to be killed.
Gotcha.
So that's a motivating factor for Abraham. But another motivating factor is more in a general sense of all humanity. You know, if you wipe out that whole place, what about the good guy? You know, let's set aside for now the fact that my nephew Lot's one of the good guys, but what about any good guy? I mean, is that the way you dispense justice? Is that you would wipe out even the good guy with the bad guy? And when you talk about that, it's very similar to a New Testament passage of Jesus, you know, when the tares in the field, when the workers in the field go, hey, do you want us to tear up the to pick out the tares? You know, the weeds.
Right.
In your field. And he goes, no, because if you do that, you know, you'll tear up the good stuff that I've planted as well. You'll tear up the wheat. So, let it alone for now. I'll separate it out in the final judgment. I got it. You know, it's just, but let's delay justice at this point. But here, the outcry is too large. You know, God's got to intervene. Otherwise, people would assume there is no justice. Why not the survival of the fittest? If there's no God who's going to intervene...
If there is no justice.
Yeah, if there's no God who imposes justice, survival of the fittest. Why don't I just murder my neighbor, take his house, if I'm strong enough to do that? You know, what? He's going to do it to me if I don't do it to him. So...
Hitler.
Yeah, that's the point of this passage is there is God and there is justice. And he intervenes. He doesn't let travesty go on forever.
El Shaddai. I need to commit that one to memory.
Yeah, and it's not a bargaining. Did you forget to ask me when I said there's two things here? And see, you got so rabbit trailed.
Hey, Bob, you know, you had two things that you were going
to
bring
up. Oh, way to go. Okay. The second thing is this, and honestly, this just occurred to me. I haven't actually seen this in the literature, but we commonly ask the question on the podcast, what was Moses saying to Israel as they're coming out of Egypt? Which is the right question to ask.
Right.
What's he saying with this passage? Do you think as Israel lived as slaves for 400 years in Egypt, that they were interwoven with Egyptian culture?
Mm-hmm.
Sure they were, right? Are they going, you know, when God's wiping out Egypt, are they going, whoa, there's, Egypt is not really our good friend, but some of those guys I really like, you know, they brought me bread, and they helped me with this, and I farmed next to that guy, and he's a pretty good neighbor. You know, you, God, are you killing all of them in the Reds? You know, it's that kind of question. And here's God going, hey, or here's Moses going, hey, God's judge of all the earth. And no, he doesn't do that unless there's really an out, unless it's legit.
An outcry.
Right? An outcry, and it's legit. And then he does act. So are those good Egyptians really good guys? You know, no, they're not. If he'd have found some, he'd have spared them. So it's that kind of question as well.
I see exactly what you're saying. That makes total sense.
Yeah, they're interwoven with Egypt. Like, for instance, it's so easy for us to make great generalizations. You know, all the Egyptians were terrible. They're normal humans. Moses was found by an Egyptian princess and raised by her in Pharaoh's household. A Hebrew slave got all the privileges of Egypt. You know, they weren't terrible people in that sense. You know what I'm saying? You'd have had some of the Hebrews going, I don't know, these guys are okay. You know?
Well, and what I got to see there is, it's God saying, yeah, but you know, all their gods?
Yeah, oh yeah.
They're not
even... Yeah, we'll get to that. Yeah.
Yeah, they're not even there.
No, we'll get to that. Yeah. That's what he's saying. They're
and
not
I,
gods.
And I think we get that here, too. You know, in this passage, we get an example of God's grace, in a sense, because his answers are, well, yeah, absolutely, if
I could. He acquiesces.
Right.
Okay, I won't do it for 45.
Mm-hmm. But again, he's not haggling, but he is just, you know, illustrating that, yes, if that's your observation, yeah, absolutely,
yeah, you are correct. That is a consideration for me. I have no desire to wipe out the righteous.
Because that, he doesn't, and I think a lot of times, Bob, and I don't know if you've ever heard this before, but from those not believing the word,
yeah.
But how could he do that? You know, how could God do that?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. There's a great, let me give you a terrible illustration. And then we're going to flip it around and make okay. some sense out of it. But the reason I want to do this is it's a negative example, but it's a really good one. I was at a movie once. I'm going to leave these people unnamed, but you know all of them.
Okay.
So would a lot of our listeners. Kathy and I went to a movie, and the couple sitting in front of us did not know we were behind them. Okay, and it was a movie, it's a Grisham novel. I think it was The Firm. They made a movie out of that. Okay, Tom Cruise was, was the guy. Okay, so they got to frame Tom Cruise because he's uncovering some secrets, right? So they fly him down to Aruba or some place in the Caribbean, you know, and then they send out a prostitute to entice him, right? Entrapment. Mm-hmm. And as that scene was being played out, the wife of the guy in front of us leans over to her husband and says, how could he do that? He's falling for this trollop, you know. And the guy looks over at the wife and he goes, how could he not do that? Look how good looking. Yeah, he had no idea we were sitting behind him. Okay, and I hear this conversation. I just start laughing in my heart. I'm like Sarah, you know, right. Laughing inside at my heart. So, but now we're going to turn that around. Here's how that applies to your question. People ask, you know, how could God wipe out? How could he not?
When you really think about it.
How could he not do that? You know, for instance, if somebody did something terrible to my daughter, would I want there to be justice?
Mm-hmm.
Of course you would. And if there isn't, you begin to think, you know, I don't know about this whole deal. there is no justice. Without justice, people begin to cry out, and mayhem ensues, you know, if there's not. So, whereas some people might ask, how could God destroy such and such? There's another side of that coin. And the other side is, how could he not do that?
Well, and as we read several episodes ago with Noah.
Yeah. You know, he wiped out the whole earth at one point. You know, pretty fed up with stuff. All in all, you know, one way we could say it, Jamie, is, and we mentioned this on the last podcast, my strong desire, passionate desire, is that people would be theologians. Mm-hmm. And that means thinking about God. He is the most complex guy I know. He is not easy to quantify and say, oh, he'll do X or he'll do Y. He is extremely complex. Let me give you two examples of this that you could fit everything else in between these two examples. There is, like, in the realm of justice, take a monster like Adolf Hitler. Mm-hmm. And we're just using round figures for the sake of illustration. Kills 6 million Jews. Say it's 7 million with the other people that he killed and so on. Okay, I, in my sense of justice, might say, you know, Adolf, you're a pretty bad guy. 7 million. And each of those 7 million, let's round their lifespans off to 70 years. So 7 million times 70, I'm sending you to hell till you pay that off. Mm-hmm. Okay? And after X, whatever that is, 490-something.
Million.
Yeah, wherever the comma and decimal point is in there. You know, when you pay that off, then we're even. Okay? God sends them to hell forever. Mm-hmm. Okay? I would not do that. And you don't have to be Adolf for him to do that.
Right.
Okay? You got to just not believe him. Mm-hmm. I personally would not do that. Thank God I'm not the judge. Okay? But neither would I save Adolf Hitler. Right? God saves. I would not die for my enemies. I would not go on a cross and give my, if I had one to give, a righteous life in the place of my enemies. I would never do that. Right? His holiness and justice is on a scale to one side that I would never do, but I wouldn't even approach on the other end of the spectrum his love. He is one extreme guy.
Well,
but he's balanced. And how his attributes work out into the application of justice, I leave in his hands. Mm-hmm. I just go, man, I will never question your love and justice. I mean, Jesus died for me. That was not fair that I have eternal life. I'm guilty. But I was declared innocent because of a substitute. Okay, so I'm not questioning God's justice. I leave that in his hands. My point is, that is one extreme dude. You do not want to be on the wrong side of his justice.
Well, and I hear over the last several weeks in one of our studies, we talked about Manasseh. And
that's right, the bad king. And that he forgave.
And I know I'm jumping way ahead in the story here, but
he forgave that guy, bad as Adolf, and mm-hmm. he forgave that guy. He forgave him.
Because
see, I would not do that. I would not do that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You mutilated my daughter. I am not forgiving you. You got to pay for that. God forgives people that mutilated his son.
Mm-hmm.
He forgives that. He's one extreme guy. You do not want to be on the wrong side of his hammer. You want to be on the right side of his hammer. You need to. He is the one guy. You know those T-shirts that we'll see around town? You know, no fear.
Right.
I just want to go up to those guys sometimes and get right in their face. You know, one inch away and go, let me tell you, buddy. No fear as far as everything that exists except one. And that one thing you better fear with every inch of your being, because that guy could destroy your soul in hell forever, and he will do it. Okay, he's not answerable to anybody. He's the end. He's the beginning and the end, the Alpha and the Omega. When he says it, it's done. You get on the wrong side of him, it's over. It was over for Pharaoh. And what determines what's over and not? Like we said, Manasseh killed countless people. How did he end up on the right side? His heart
changed.
Underneath, he believed God.
I don't want to try and find the exact place, but if I remember it correctly, his heart changed.
He repented. It says he repented.
He
changed.
Yeah.
Was wrong. He admits he was wrong and submitted himself to God. You do that, you get adopted into his family, you're on God's love side. And God will go to bat for you. God will save you. You harden your heart against God, you're out, man. That's it. You're up against the final judge, and you're guilty. Mm-hmm. And he's not an enabler. He's not going to hold the gavel because he answers to anybody or he actually explain himself. There is no courtroom that he answers to. He's the courtroom.
And it really comes down to the cosmic battle, which is the title of this podcast, which is going on. And there is another guy out there, you know, as we've talked, you know, he's definitely not as powerful as, but he does have the power to take you into the same place.
Yeah. One way to say it, Jamie, is great that you're bringing this up. How powerful is Satan compared to a human being? Infinite. Compared to a human. He's right. Not actually infinite, but compared to us, he's essentially infinite. Compared to God, he's nothing. So, you tell me. Imagine this scenario. You're walking down a street. The crowd is New York City. 10 billion people. 5 million on one side of the sidewalk, 5 million on the other. It's crowded, man. You're walking down a street, and somebody catches your attention in the crowd. And it's a guy. And they look at you with recognition. And you realize that. And your eyes kind of widen, and you're like, oh man, as you fight through the crowd and he's fighting through the crowd and you meet and the guy says, son, you know, and it's like this reunion that you've been waiting for forever. And in one person's illustration, that's God. Mm-hmm. You know, my son, come here, you know, out of all these 10 million, and imagine on earth, right, 6-7 billion right now. Ah, oh, and there's this hug and reunion. Imagine the other guy. And everything's the same, except that's the devil saying, my son, yes, you know, all right, here. Ooh, those worlds are night and day, life and death.
Well, and a sobering fact, Bob, is that as you pointed out, I believe in our first podcast, whether you picked a side or not,
you're on the side. Yeah, you can't. There's no middle ground. There's no Switzerland. You're on that illustration is true of every single person that's listening. Every single person on earth. It's either God fighting through the crowd that you're hugging in reunion, or it's the devil. And the stakes are infinite.
Well, and it ringing in my ears right now is the passage, those who know my voice will hear me.
Yeah, even of our listeners, you know, if you're listening and you're wondering, that should scare you to death. Because believers don't wonder. They know their Father's voice.
Right.
And you could be adopted into that family as simply as confessing.
And
confession, not like some Roman Catholic thing, get inside a booth. It's in your heart, man. Just go, God, just cry out to your Father and go, I don't want to be on this side of the street. You know, cross the jaywalk, man.
Right.
Watch the lights. Scoot between the traffic and get over there to where God is and meet him. And he's there, open arms.
Well, and again, jumping ahead of the story, but that's what the Holy Spirit allows us to do, right?
Yeah. Yeah. He's that manifestation of God. I don't want to say manifestation like there's three different manifestations of Him, Father, Son, and Spirit, but it's the Holy Spirit who is His own individual person, but is part of the Godhead. I mean, that's, we're way down the line.
Way down.
We're 2,000 pages into this. I don't know how to explain that, but
yeah, well, we've got 24 more hours in this day, Bob.
The Holy Spirit will come to your heart. He's the guy that speaks to your heart, you know, and goes, hey, dude,
right,
get over here. And you ignore that, and it's evidence that, man, you're not in the household. You're the seed of the serpent.
So, the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, I think, is a...
Which we get to next chapter, yeah.
Yeah. I think it paints a... I mean, we see the setup here, and it paints a very serious picture. I think we should
take it
very seriously.
It's life and death.
Yeah, I think we should apply it to our lives. I think we should take the example of what we're given here, and realize that we're in the same place. We're not above. I don't know if that's the word I'm looking for, Bob, but we're in the same place. I mean, just we have computers and everything else, but we're in the same place.
Yeah, the phrase, you know, Abraham said, "Will not the judge of all the earth act righteously?" Yes, he will.
Mm-hmm.
Which is very comforting to some, devastating to most.
Right.
Right. He's going to act righteously.
Right.
If you're guilty, you're guilty. Let me tell you how many people, if there's 7 billion people on earth, 7 billion of them are guilty.
Since Genesis 3, right?
Yeah.
We can't get by that fact. We're a fallen race.
You're born into it.
Right.
And your actions have displayed it. So, have you been as bad as Adolf? Probably not. But have you been as good as Jesus?
Definitely not.
So, we're all in the same boat, the Titanic. And there's only one way to get off that ship onto the life raft, and that's believing the truth. For if we got in trouble by believing a lie, you know, in trouble, i.e.,
mm-hmm.
right, lost,
right,
doomed,
separated
from God, the only way out of that is believing the truth. It's the only solution. And that's how you're saved, is you believe the truth that God has said.
In that particular arena, you're right. With truth, the exact opposite is the lie, right?
Yeah.
What is the tool that is used over and over and over in the cosmic battle is
the lie.
And that's why it is so important that we continue. And I know, and just speaking for myself, Bobo, but we continue to get this, the truth out there.
That's
the
right.
Truth has to be out there.
Well, once you know, one way to say it is, once you come to faith, the compelling factor is you're interested in truth. All of a sudden, you become interested in what's ultimately true.
And, because that lie doesn't lead anywhere.
That's right. And so, you know, it's a joy for us to be able to do these podcasts. I mean, we've talked about it personally. I don't know if we've put it on the podcast, but it's our a large part of our reason for being.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
It's the joy we look forward to, and I understand there's scheduling things and so on, but it imagine if you came to know God and then your mouth was taped shut. I mean, that'd be... Just kill me now.
Torture.
Yeah,
torture.
I can't talk to anybody about this, you know, if I can't explain the truth, then why be here?
Yeah, so. Don't tell me. Yeah, I'm with you. All right, my friend, I think we should bring this.
Are we at our favorite place?
We are at our favorite place.
All right, we're in the throne room of God before his throne of grace.
And he hears us.
That's right. So let's talk to him. Lord, we understand your words, and I'm reminded of what one of those who is not of the household of faith once said, ironically, that it wasn't the things that were difficult to understand in the scriptures that scared him. It was the things that were clear. And so we've read this chapter about the judge of all the earth. And those things are clear to us. And on the one hand, that scares us to death. And on the other hand, it's our joy and refuge to take shelter under the Almighty, loving God. Thank you, Lord.